you have a fight, you better have a kapampangan watching your back. And so it was from the earliest days of the occupation. In 1571, 2,000 warriors from Macabebe rattled their blades against the Spanish from the decks of their caracoas. 1574, Pampango's allied with Spaniards faced off against the warlord Limahong. 1603, 1,000 Kapampangans rallied to defend Manila against the Chinese uprising. 1762, fighters from that province held the lines at the trenches as the British marched against the capital. And so on and so forth. Fierce fighting men seemingly sprouting like rice from the floodplains of the Pampanga Delta. Let's add another year to that list. 1616. In February of that fateful year, a detachment of 300 Pampanga soldiers boarded ships anchored off Manila Bay. It was the greatest fleet the Spanish had ever assembled in the Far East, 18 ships strong, crouched and wary against the glimmering crystal waters. On the gangways, the Pampangos rubbed shoulders with Spanish troops and Japanese mercenaries and Manila man cabin boys. There was a promise, too, that Portuguese ships and soldiers would soon join them. It was time to get moving. Anchors were hoisted up, sails were unfurled. At the head of the flagship stood the fleet's commander, Governor General Juan de Silva. He intended to sail this armada and all its soldiers straight as an arrow into the heart of enemy waters. But would the ship stay the course? Or did the warriors from Pampanga just board an expedition that was doomed from the very beginning? Welcome to the Colonial Department. This is the podcast where we take long-lost stories from Philippine colonial history and bring them to life. In this episode, we set sail with a grand fleet that ultimately became one of Spain's biggest failures in the Far East. This is Season 5, Episode 3, An Awkward Armada. To get a glimpse of what Southeast Asia was like in the early 1600s, it's helpful to call back on that handy allegory of colonialism that we call Dune. Yes, the science fiction book turned Timothée Chalamet movie.
My planet Arrakis is so beautiful when the sun is low. Rolling over the sands, you can see spice in the air. The outsiders ravage our lands in front of us.
In this epic sci-fi tale, it is spice that sets the story in motion. Spice that glistens over the sand dunes of the planet Arrakis. Spice that sets the great powers of the galaxy salivating. Spice that makes men rich.
What's to become of our world?
Give or take a few spaceships and Timothée Chalamet's glowing blue eyes, it was kind of the same in our part of the world 400 years ago. The world was hungry for spice, that is, cloves, nutmeg, and mace. People all over the world use them to flavor food, cure sicknesses, or even spice up their sex lives. At the time, you could only find these spices in the Moluccas, or as the Europeans called them, the Spice Islands. Control the Moluccas, and you control the spice. But if you were a European power, you couldn't take control of the spice itself. Not yet, anyway. That was reserved for the sea kingdoms of Ternate and Tidore, the rival sultanates who ruled over the Moluccas. But you could control the supply, and you could control the exchange, and you could control the sea lanes that went in and out of the Spice Islands. Throughout much of the 1500s, Portugal was comfortably settled in that middleman role. And when the Iberian kingdoms united in 1580, Spain too looked to get into the Spice Island action. But in 1595, a wild card appeared on the horizon, an upstart power currently at war with Spain. The Dutch had arrived in Southeast Asia. Oh, Governor General Juan de Silva knew all about the Dutch. He spent most of his career in Europe fighting them. So when he was assigned to the Philippine Islands, he looked out at the ships from the Netherlands prowling the Southeast Asia sea lanes and saw an existential threat. according to one Spanish scholar.
If they managed to control the spice industry, the Dutch would seek to dominate the lucrative trade with China and Japan, which would provide them with even more resources with which to continue their expansion. And if the Dutch managed to secure trade with China, it would strangle the livelihood of the Philippines, and the Castilian presence in Asia would be doomed.
In his first year of office, the Dutch proved Governor General de Silva's suspicions right. In 1610, four Dutch ships stabbed at Philippine waters around Bataan. The Spanish Navy sank three of them, killed the commanding officer, and forced the fourth ship to retreat. As a reward for the successful defense, Governor General de Silva got a huge payday of 200,000 pieces of eight. A very generous thank you from the Spanish crown. To stop further attacks, seize command of the spice, and plant the Spanish flag over the entire East Indies, de Silva cooked up a bold new plan. He would build a grand armada right here in the Philippines and join forces with the Portuguese based in Goa, India. He saw it in his head, 10 galleons from the Philippines, 10 galleons from India, sailing together as a combined fleet that would sweep through Southeast Asia and crack the Dutch forces into splinters. On paper, it was decisive, dangerous, seething with ambition and aggro. But as in many things in life, the execution left much to be desired. Hi, this is Leo, creator of the Colonial Department. Sorry to interrupt your listening, but I'd like to get to know a little bit more about the listeners of this podcast. Yep, that means you. If you're listening to this episode on Spotify, scroll down on your Now Playing page to answer the little survey question I left for you. For this ep, the question is, what made you interested in Philippine history? I'm excited to read all your answers. Okay, now let's get back to Governor General de Silva's armada. In an age before Tito and Tita Viber groups, Governor General Juan de Silva quickly found out what a headache it was to coordinate a cross-continental joint naval task force. Sending a message to Madrid from Manila? It might take 2 years before you hear back. Goa was closer, but by the time the letter arrived in your mailbox, the guy you wrote to had already changed his mind. Communication problems turned the creation of the Grand Spanish Armada into a six-year-long comedy of errors. From India to Spain to an expectant Manila, promises were made, permissions were given, offers were tendered, reinforcements were pledged. But Juan de Silva, time and time again, was left languishing in the wind as they all amounted to nice words but a whole lot of empty air. De Silva's grand plan had to be adjusted and postponed with every shift in the wind. To illustrate the kinds of problems Governor General de Silva kept running into, let's consider this little incident that happened in December 1612. 2 years before, in September 1610, the Portuguese Viceroy of India had promised de Silva that six galleons would join him in his mission against the Dutch. That never happened, but fine, no hard feelings. De Silva sent a messenger in 1612 to ask Portuguese India for help once again. But there was a new viceroy in town, and this time the priorities had changed. He needed his troops at home, but maybe he could send some small reinforcements next year? As one historian summarized the incident,
"The preparation of this embassy to Goa revealed one of the problems of the organization of the Navy, coordination and communication between the parties. De Silva made his preparations for a year and a half, but given the enormous distance between Manila and Goa and the specific periods in which travel could be made, that time frame was very tight, and any setback could translate into months of delay. De Silva always acted under the assumption that, once receiving his message, Goa would immediately help him."
Of course, that was not the case. In the end, after 6 years of missed deadlines, De Silva had to go it alone. No galleons from India, no galleons from Spain, only the forces he had built and mustered right here in the Philippines. Let's run down the list of the ships in the Spanish Armada of 1616, as listed in Peter Borschberg's book on 17th century Southeast Asian history. There were 10 galleons, hulking and gigantic. There were 3 frigates, agile and itching for a fight. There were 4 galleys, keels low to the water and bristling with oars. There was a lone patache, sails billowing from its twin masts. Shipyards in Cavite, Albay, Marinduque, Pangasinan, Masbate, and Mindoro were a frenzy of activity as they rushed to complete the galleons. Governor General De Silva wanted them supersized, around 1,000 tons or more, which is much larger than many warships of the time. Up to 6,000 to 8,000 workers were needed to build one ship. A Spanish official from that time wrote that under De Silva's reign, entire villages had to be emptied out just to man the lumber yards, where Indians labored under inhumane conditions to chop down the molave trees needed for the ships. De Silva would lead the Armada himself. Under his command were 2,500 men. There were 1,000 Spaniards, 600 of them from Manila, while the rest were shipped in from other garrisons in the Philippines and Mexico. A side note about the Spanish, many of them didn't even want to be there. They'd requested to leave the Philippines, but the Governor General had denied their applications, and they ended up here, inside the Grand Fleet. On the local front, there were 300 Kapampangan fighters, as we described earlier. There were also 300 Japanese warriors, who were so unruly that they weren't permitted to board the ships carrying their weapons for fear that they'd get into fights. The rest of the crew was made up of sailors and cabin boys. Look, 2,500 men sounded good on paper, but as a Spanish scholar noted, seemed to be an uncomfortably small number to man an armada. Officials in the Philippines, priests and counselors alike, were furious at this fleet. Sure, the Governor General's plan had the approval of the King. But did the King know that to assemble it, De Silva had to practically empty Manila of all of its soldiers, leaving the capital unprotected? Did the King know that the plan had practically bankrupted the treasury, and what's more, stirred unrest among the natives who had been forced to work in the labor camps? Did the King know that just a year before, many of the ship cannons had exploded during test firings, which wasn't, you know, exactly a ringing endorsement of the quality of equipment aboard the fleet? Over the many, many protests of his officials, Governor General Juan de Silva covered his ears and weighed anchor, and off his Grand Armada went to fight the Dutch. Except they never really fought anyone. The fleet left Manila in late January or early February 1616, and they arrived in the Straits of Singapore at the tail end of February. De Silva decided to sail to Melaka to wait for his Portuguese allies to come through. But before he left, he sent off a finger-wagging letter to the King of Johor, reprimanding the ruler for helping the Dutch. To add some more teeth to his letter, De Silva ordered his men to land in Johor and chop down all of their fruit trees. Another significant thing that happened in Singapore, the Governor General's flagship La Salvadora, built in Masbate, ran aground in Singapore and inadvertently discovered that maritime passage that Singaporeans now call the Governor's Strait. When the fleet arrived in Melaka, Governor General Juan de Silva suffered a burning fever and died after 11 days. Disease hit the armada hard. Sailors and soldiers swelled up and turned yellow, and their corpses had to be dumped by the dozens into the bay. It was said that 700 died because of the sickness. The remaining captains of the fleet decided to hightail it back to Manila. 5 months after the Grand Armada had first set sail, they limped back to the Philippine Islands, tails firmly tucked in between their legs. Total days of action? 0. Thanks for listening to this episode of The Colonial Department. Find us on Instagram and TikTok for more history, behind-the-scenes, and non-fiction book recommendations. If you want to know more about galleons in the Philippines, listen to Season 4, Episode 9, The Lethal Cost of Building the Galleons. Leo Mangubat wrote, narrated, and produced this episode. Anya Ong Reyes read quotations from sources. Clips from Dune are from Warner Brothers Discovery. References for this episode are 1. Peter Borscheberg's 2010 book, The Singapore and Malacca Straits, violence, security, and diplomacy in the 17th century. 2. A paper by Inigo Valpuesta Villa, published in 2022 in the Obradoiro de Historia Moderna. 3. Linda Newsom's 2011 book, Conquest and Pestilence in Early Spanish Philippines. 4. Scholarly articles from Leonard Andaya, Hatib Abdul Kadir, Rudyard Larhoven, Elizabeth Pino Watermans, and Andrew Christian Peterson.